From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
This past Friday, the presidents of Russia and China, along with heads of state of Armenia, Bulgaria, and Slovakia, got together at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum for a discussion of the problems facing the world today. They were joined by the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, in a discussion that was moderated by RT's Sophie Shevardnadze.
Distinguished participants, I'm going to try to do my best so that all the important issues that you've raised in your remarks, so that we can discuss them. Well, climate change has been mentioned, but it is mostly an economic forum. So let me start with the main economic news, that is the trade war between China and U.S. The first question goes to President Xi Jinping. China and America right now involved in trade confrontation, but at the same time, they're so closely intertwined and they have such a great influence upon the world economy that it is very important and difficult to understand how not to endanger one's interests. And we know that Trump is a good negotiator. First, he withdraws from the current agreement. He starts to play by different rules, and it creates pressure, and he gets the deal he needs. That's what happened with NAFTA. That's happened with Japan. But what is going to happen with America and you, China? Thank you. Maybe I do have some answer to this question in my notes. I don't know. Well, quite frankly, you have touched upon an issue of the relationship between globalization and the anti-globalization and the related matters. As a matter of fact, and my remarks, I have already delivered our position on globalization. I have said that we are an ardent proponent of globalization in this world. Well, China has somewhat changed its position, as it were. Objectively, it is the case. China is the greatest proponent of globalization because globalization goes in line with historical trends. That is how history is developing. Whereas anti-globalization is also a feature of today. But I think that it is but a small part of a greater wave which could bring about some minor changes but won't be able to stop the wave of globalization as a whole. Globalization is a double-edged sword. Of course, there are those who stand to benefit and those who stand to lose. So this is a question of distribution. The distribution of benefits and interests. But, you know, if you are unhappy with fleas in your fur coat, you cannot simply throw the fur coat into the oven. This doesn't mean that because of all that is happening, you have to stick to unilateralism or protectionism. Because the fundamental values do not always give us straightforward response to the interests of countries. Sometimes these fundamental values do meet the interests, sometimes they don't, but as far as the universal benefit is concerned, we have to all stick to this principle, because that will bring about a harmonious world. We cannot be self-serving. And as we can see, currently, economic globalization and related issues require an immediate response. Sometimes there are disruptions in the governance of this globalization. Sometimes this machine that manages globalization starts to fail. Of that notwithstanding, this trend has to be protected. The current multilateral system, the trade system, has to be protected. We are not saying that we've got to start everything from scratch, that we have to overturn the established order. No, that's not what we're saying. What we are saying is we have to think how to improve the current system, the current mechanisms, what President Putin has said in his notes, in his remarks. President Putin has said that there are many countries in the world, and all of them are brothers, but there are big brothers, small brothers, and yet everyone is equal. We have to assume that everyone has to have due respect for one another when settling our differences. I'm of the view that we have to show respect for social systems and the development paths chosen by each and every country. Moreover, based on the current world order, we have to take into account new changes, such as the new economies and their role, and the emerging markets that are rising. Developing countries and emerging markets have to have their voice heard. Their role in international affairs deserves respect. Only then will we be able to make sure the world develops rationally. We have always been a proponent of peaceful coexistence. Despite the divergences of views, we still have to arrive at some common ground and duly settle any differences that might arise. I do hope that such mutual respect is going to characterize our relations with each and every country. Thank you very much, President Xi. President Putin, President Xi has said that the tariff war is the confrontation between globalization and anti-globalization. I don't know whether you agree with that, but my question is as follows. Where is Russia in this confrontation? Does Russia have to choose one paradigm? The Chinese have a very good proverb. When tigers fight in the valley, the smart monkey sits aside and looks at how it's going to end. But everything changes. And this picture is also changing. But what do these changes consist of? As of now, we stick to the principles which the world used to stick to just recently. The U.S., it is a high technology economy that has always preached to us the ideas of freedom of trade, democracy, and the world economic arena. But you see what is happening right now. They are trying to incorporate another practice. I said that in my remarks. When big and strong rivals emerged, and they're getting stronger, the U.S. thinks that the old instruments serve them no longer, and that's why they resort to different kinds of restrictions, to tariff wars, tariff restrictions. Incidentally, it deals a huge blow. Yesterday, I met the heads of large investment companies, and I cited some statistics. These statistics come from international institutions, the World Bank in particular. If these restrictions grow by 2022 at the same rate, by 2022 it will have resulted in a slump of the world GDP in 2%, and the world trade is going to decrease by 17%. Of course, we are against such scenario. I'd like to remind you that in 2008, 2019, when the world financial crisis struck, the slump in the world economy was 2%, the world GDP, whereas the world trade decreased by 10%. But if everything continues as it is going on right now, everyone who is here will have run into difficulties. Colossal losses will be suffered by businesses, and all of this is going to translate on our citizens, because no new jobs are going to be created. On the contrary, jobs will disappear. No more money is going to be funneled into different budgets of different levels. This is going to have a very difficult and very negative impact, and we're certainly against that. Where is Russia plays in the fight for the liberal principles and the development of economic ties? As you know, our relationship is developing with China and with other countries too, in spite of all these attempts at putting obstacles in our way. Despite all that, our trade is growing. But should this trend that we see right now persist, it is going to be bad for everyone. And yet we're trying to build our relations based on equal rights and on the principles that I've enumerated in my speech. Secretary General Guterres, this confrontation between China and America, in a sense, translates and spills over on the United Nations. The U.S. doesn't conceal, for instance, that it doesn't support Chinese initiative One Belt, One Road, because it fears that it only gives an economic advantage to China, but also a geopolitical one. You have spoken on many occasions in favor of One Belt, One Road because you think that is very useful for the third world, because China gives a lot of money to infrastructure development. So what do you think this confrontation is going to lead to, as well as what is going to be the policy of such an important UN donor as the United Nations? Or do you think the informal leadership in the United Nations is going to get to China?
A Spanish politician once said that politicians are the only animals that stumble twice at the same stone. And the world has stumbled into a Cold War. And we all know what a Cold War means. I think our duty is to avoid the world to fall into another Cold War. And another Cold War of two blocks that probably will then be completely separated in a monetary, in a military, but also in a trade and technology perspective. This would be extremely dangerous for us all, and we need to do everything to avoid it. And we can only avoid it rebuilding trust. And to rebuild trust, there is a first thing that is essential, to respect international law. And another thing that is essential is to contribute to multipolarity in our world. I do not see the world only as the United States and China, with all due respect for President Xi Jinping. I think it's the United States, it's China, it's the Russian Federation, it's the European Union, it's India, it's many other countries. And it is the capacity for all these countries in an equal basis to have a relationship based on equality, on trust, and on respect of international law that we can build a world that avoids this trade war. This Cold War. And I think the United Nations must be the platform that helps to make this possible. And we need to learn with the mistakes made in the past. There is no solution that one country alone can promote. There is no solution that one institution alone can promote. If we want to address the enormous challenges we face, we need serious international cooperation. And so it is my true belief that the present situation needs to be overcome and that this sleepwalking into a Cold War needs to be stopped.
Thank you, certainly, and we've got to overcome that together. There are two representatives of the European Union here. Maybe, Prime Minister Pellegrini, I'm going to ask this question of you. I'd like to know what the EU thinks on what is happening, because there might be a tariff war between the EU and the US brewing. They want to slap tariffs on European cars, which is going to deal a huge blow to Europe. In case of China, we saw this conflict coming. It has deep roots. It is not today that it emerged. But in the case of Europe, which is a U.S. ally, it seems as if it were an initiative of Trump. What does the EU think on that?
Thank you for this question. It is very difficult because not only European Union, but also Slovakia as a member of European Union would have been very strong. It would have a very strong impact on our economy also. You mentioned, for example, automotive sector. During my visit 1 month ago with President Trump, I explained him that an action against European Union and tariffs on car and industrial products would impact not just Germany, but also Slovakia, Czech Republic, and as you mentioned, it means their allies and their friends. And we also do not understand if friends are doing each other such a things. So on the other side, the offer from European Union in this moment is not to increase tariffs, but to put tariffs on zero. It would even increase the business between United States and European Union in average maybe 8 or 9 billions of euros from both sides, so it will be a nice win-win situation. So we are lucky in this moment that Mr. President postponed his decision for another 6 months, but we don't know what will be when these 6 months are over, and we hope we will not start a trade war, because it will not help even not United States. It will not just make something wrong towards European Union. It's also bad for them. And I believe that we will be able, in a normal dialogue, finish this situation in a positive way, because otherwise we will lose jobs, as President Putin mentioned, we will lose jobs. We will not have any more such economic growth, what we have now, and it will really create not a pleasant situation within the countries of European Union. So I believe into a healthy brain of all which are involved, and that will be a positive decision at the end. I hope so, but you never know.
Thank you. President Putin, we are talking about allies. Right now, China is considered to be one of Russia's most important allies, and you meet President Xi more often than others, and the same goes for President Xi, called you even his closest friend the day before yesterday. Important agreements were signed, and the trade between China and Russia has hit the record mark of $180 billion. But this is a record. But if we subtract commodities, raw materials from this trade, then in terms of other kinds of cooperation, military cooperation, it'll turn out that the Chinese-Russian cooperation is not that close. Why is that? Well, first and foremost, I'd like to add something to what our guest from Slovakia has said. The analysis is absolutely correct, but there is one thing I'd like to add. This uncertainty, this unpredictability in the world affairs and the world economy as the main factor that deters development. The unpredictability is getting so strong and so fast, and this is the greatest problem we're running into today. And this was a sign. I do hope that common sense, as you have said, is going to prevail. As far as our relations with China are concerned, these are not words. These are concrete measures, concrete policies. Indeed, President Xi Jinping and I have fostered very good personal ties. Yesterday we spent a lot of time together. We talked about different issues. We said goodbye to one another only at midnight when it was 4 o'clock in the morning in China. We talked about everything. And I had to apologize to President Xi to tell him that I had to leave him because if you are a host, you cannot treat your guests like that, retaining them for so long. But the only thing it demonstrates is the great agenda we've got. Yes, 108 billion. We wanted 100 billion. And we hit the mark of 108 billion. And our trade has only grown thanks to our joint efforts, thanks to the position of our Chinese friends and President Xi Jinping in particular. The structure of our trade has always been changing and improving too. The share of machines was growing last year. There was a drop, but there were some factors explaining that, and we are not alarmed by that because the trends on the whole are very good. Now, the first thing about energy. Indeed, energy is one of the largest components of our cooperation.
But it also includes a lot of technologies. For example, we built an oil system going to the Pacific and one branch goes to China. A lot of new technologies were used. China, together with the French, is also participating in an LNG project with Novatek in the north of our country. And now the Arctic project will be implemented there. And a lot of high technologies are being used there. And it also provides work for various other industries. We have excellent prospects in space, in aviation. We are now beginning to implement practically the project for a big transport helicopter. We have excellent prospects in atomic energy, in engineering for atomic power plants, and there are, of course, all kinds of high technologies there. We have already built one reactor for China. We are building two more and working on more generally in machine building, engineering, electrical engineering, all of that. We have great prospects. In Moscow the day before yesterday, our colleagues reported to us from various working groups. I think we have 11 working groups. And we're very happy that our relationship with China is so deep and as broad as with no other country in the world. And so we are, in the whole sense of that word, strategic partners. I have to emphasize this. And the important thing is that from both sides there is a desire to make it to make the approach to all problems an equal approach based on equal rights. That's why the Chinese have supported closer cooperation with the Eurasian Economic Union. There are some complex questions there. Certain commodity groups should be discussed, and there is a big discussion and sometimes debate between our people and the Chinese partners. But we find solution. The final outcome is always a solution to the problem because we want to find a solution, and I'm quite convinced that our prospects are quite good. As for the global situation as a whole, cooperation between Russia and China on the international arena is definitely a most important factor for stability in international affairs. Trade between Russia and China, can that be a substitution, a replacement for relations between Russia and the West. Well, listen, we are not creating military alliances with China. We are strategic allies, but we are not working against anyone. We are working for the benefit of our countries and our partners. We are not substituting or supplanting anything. Our relations with the European Union have always been multifaceted. We had trade to the tune of 400 billion annually. Then it was halved, but not because of us. It was not our initiative. And now it is getting closer to 300 billion a year. Common sense is beginning to prevail. Trade is beginning to grow again. One doesn't impede the other. We are ready to work with everyone, including the United States. The volume of trade there, of course, is minimum. Under Obama, trade was 20 billion. With Trump, it's now 5 billion more, even though Trump has implemented many restrictions as regards Russia, the greatest number of restrictions against Russia. But trade is growing a bit. We are not setting anyone against anyone else. We are ready to work with everyone. Chairman Xi, I started by saying that the St. Petersburg Forum brings together leaders who perhaps would not meet anywhere else. Well, you have that dream of One Belt, One Road. The trade route from China to Europe cannot happen without Russia. But Russia is not a direct participant. It is linking with the One Belt, One Road. What does that mean for China? Will you be investing as much money in our country and in our infrastructure as you're investing in other participating countries? Indeed, One Belt, One Road is the initiative that is becoming more and more dynamic. Initially, it was something very simple. 6 years ago, I proposed that initiative, and first in Astana. We discussed the idea of the one economic Silk Road, and then I proposed the Sea Road. The initial idea was simple. We just wanted to use the historical memory and the experience of dynamic exchanges between different countries and to energize that dynamic, that tradition in today's world. That's why I proposed this initiative. We had some excellent response. The Silk Road in ancient times included just a limited number of routes. But today, most countries have expressed a willingness to participate in this initiative.
130
So we signed an agreement within the framework of this initiative with over 130 countries and about 30 international organizations. So this result has already exceeded the achievements of the ancient Silk Road. And so the initiative is extending to many, many countries throughout the world, including Latin America and the South Pacific. This year, we organized the second Belt and Road Summit. During the first summit, we invited heads of state and government from just 29 countries. And, of course, also heads of international organizations, including Secretary General Guterres. This year, more participants wanted to come, and we invited more than 30 heads of state. We invited also Mr. Guterres, and we invited the head of the IMF. The hall was full to capacity with nothing but more. It was overflowing, just like this conference hall is. And that shows that this is a mutual attraction. We stick to the principles of joint action, joint discussion, joint implementation, and joint use. And this idea belongs not just to China. This will bring benefits to all. And those countries that initially were not willing to participate, who were saying that perhaps this is a kind of Chinese version of a Marshall Plan, well, we say that we don't want that. We don't want to dominate. We do not have such plans.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.